Welcome to the Success in Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Rajani Katta, author of the best-selling residency match guide, The Successful Match, and creator of the Residency Interview 101 course. This is a special series on the podcast called Energized at Work. We hear so much about burnout in medicine, and it is a real and very challenging problem. That's why I wanted to learn from doctors in all types of specialties who are the opposite of burned out. These are the doctors who are energized by work. I'm looking forward to sharing lessons and secrets from these doctors on this special series. I am so excited to welcome onto the podcast today, Dr. Abby Vandersall. Dr. Vandersall is head of clinical at AmSurg. AmSurg is a company that has 250 ambulatory surgery centers nationwide. And one of the reasons I was really excited to have her speak to us is because what she does is just fascinating to me. As head of clinical, she is involved in a number of different facets of this organization. So she is involved in healthcare strategy. She's involved in operations. She's involved in safety. She's involved in policy, in government affairs. So she really handles a number of different aspects of this organization. And I think it'll be really interesting to hear about what she does and how she got to this position. So Dr. Vandersall, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I would love to start by asking you, tell me about a typical week. I know you cover a wide range of functions in your job, but can you tell me what it is that you do in a typical week?
I'll try. I'm laughing because no 2 days look alike. So yes, my days are very varied. To give an example, this week I was at the health conference in Las Vegas from Sunday through Wednesday, traveled back to DC late Wednesday night. And then yesterday was a lot of honestly catching up on meetings and emails. I would say some of the key themes that came out of yesterday is I got pulled into a lot of government affairs discussions. We have a major payer in one particular state who's pretty drastically changing their reimbursement policy that will impact us. So just collaborating both internally and externally with some large national organizations, trying to figure out how we respond to that, because we don't think it's in the best interest of clinical quality and our patients. So a lot of government affairs meetings yesterday. And then today, I would say I have two big tasks on my plate. So one, we have a joint venture with a major health system in the Northeast, and we have our board meeting with them at the top of next week. And I actually sit on the board. But in addition to that, I have to help inform the board about clinical and the clinical direction. So whether that be year to date, how we're doing, or whether that be forecasting and strategy moving forward. So I have to tell that story. So honestly, a lot of my meeting, my morning this Friday will be creating slides and trying to put the slide deck together to tell that story to the board next week. And then this afternoon, all of the leadership team is getting together. So our president, our COO, myself, our head of business development, and our head of strategy, and our CFO will get on a call. And we are spending 4 hours on a Friday afternoon going through our 2024 strategy. So I will be walking through the plan for the clinical strategy. Okay. And then honestly, the reason you have all those folks on the call is you just want to make sure that the whole company is moving together in a unified direction. When I had my clinical team call, I was telling the whole team yesterday, the goal is to make sure that the whole boat's rowing together, right? You don't want one team going in one direction, another team going in a different direction. So we're getting everyone together to look at all of the first answer priorities across the board, and just to make sure that they all mesh and make sure the whole company's on the same page as to where we're headed.
Okay, so all of that sounds so exciting, but also very intimidating. So tell me a little bit about all of these different pieces that you have to put together. So one of the things I'm hearing is that you're really thinking a lot about strategy moving forward. And that involves not only thinking about your clinical strategy, but also thinking about the way that impacts the company financially. And then the piece about government affairs, the piece about negotiating with other systems. Tell me a little bit about your job really encompasses quite a bit. Tell me about these areas that you cover.
It does. So my formal official title on paper is VP of Quality and Clinical Services, but A, that's long, and B, I've learned to just introduce myself as head of clinical because it's easier to understand that way. I think I am in charge of all things clinical when it comes to AMSURG. And as you mentioned, AMSURG has about 250 ambulatory surgery centers nationwide. And I joke that if anything has a clinical lens, I get CC'd on the email. So if it's trying to figure out how to grow and do a, you know, business development, but we need a clinical input, they will reach out to me. Same thing if it has clinical finance, they will CC me and make sure I'm looped in. Same thing with operations. I'm continuously CC'd on a lot of those emails to try to figure out how to operate, how to optimize our operational efficiency and clinical operations. So all things clinical roll up under me. I mean, truly, you name it. I will say I oversee the Clinical Center of Excellence, which has four institutes underneath me. So the first is risk and safety. I'm sure that's pretty familiar to most people who are listening to your podcast. Everyone knows kind of the nuts and bolts of clinical safety and risk. The second is clinical quality, which is the bread and butter of what we do. So it's monitoring our clinical metrics and responding to them and driving education to continuously improve them. The third is what I call kind of our clinical operations field team. So how do you optimize a patient's journey? You need three people to really come together really well to do that. The first is the head of the site itself. The second is your operations individual. And then the third is the individual optimizing clinical from my team. So the clinical field team is what I call them. And then the fourth is the team that goes in on the back end, and they do a lot of our surveys and accreditation and regulatory work just to make sure we're compliant at all times. So those are the four institutes that sit underneath clinical. That's the team that rolls up underneath me. And then, like I said, in addition to that, the company as a whole, if anything has a clinical lens or needs clinical input, I'm being looped into those conversations. But there's a lot. I'm learning every single day.
There is a lot. So tell me, because we've had conversations and I can just tell how excited and energized you are about the work that you're doing. So what is it that you love about the work that you're doing? And what is it that, you know, is maybe a little bit draining or a little bit challenging?
So I'm actually relatively new to this position. I'm not necessarily new to the enterprise. So I'll take a brief second to explain. The company that I work for is Envision Healthcare. Underneath Envision Healthcare, there are two major companies. One is a medical group, and then one, as you mentioned, is AMSURG, who I currently work for. I've actually been with the medical group for the past 3 years. So I'm somewhat new in the sense that I just joined AMSURG about 6 weeks ago, and I'm learning that role. But also, to some extent, I've been relatively familiar with AMSURG for 3 years now. But I joined AMSURG because AMSURG and the ambulatory surgery centers have a lot of tailwinds and a lot of opportunity. And that is honestly what makes me really excited about the space. I describe the ASC space as one of the very rare win-win wins in healthcare. And what I mean by that is that when care is provided in the ambulatory surgery space, it's a win first and foremost for the patients. You often see the patients are happier, patient satisfaction scores are better, and also clinical quality is better. But it's also a win for providers. Providers often like and prefer to be in the ambulatory surgery space as opposed to in hospitals if they can be for a myriad of reasons. And then finally, also for payers. And usually, as again, I'm sure many of your listeners know, there's this tug and pull, give and take between payers and then patients and providers often on the other end usually. And in the ASC space, you don't have that. It's a win-win-win. So there's a lot of tailwinds. There's a lot of push to have quality care delivered in the ASC space, which is really exciting because as I said, for the past 3 years, I was on the medical group side, and that has candidly a lot of headwinds, which is fun to learn and navigate, but often you kind of just feel like you're handcuffed. So what I'm most excited about, and you said this earlier, is that I keep talking a lot about strategy and visioning, and that's probably true because AMSURG has so much growth behind it and so much opportunity. And there's this push forward. So we're always thinking, how do we grow and how do we expand? And that's not just adding centers or adding volume. It's not as simple as that. It's also what procedures can be done safely in the ambulatory space in a year that aren't being done there today. So how can we bring new types of procedures or what service lines? By service lines, I mean cardio, gyn. That's the phrase I use for service lines. What service lines aren't we providing in the ambulatory space today under AMSURG that we could in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and do it safely and effectively for our patients. So then finally, I know I mentioned to you, I spent the first 3 days of this week at the health conference. And honestly, that's what gets me most excited. I love innovation. I think the healthcare system as a whole in America, unfortunately, is trapped a few decades behind where it needs to be. But I was so excited to see this week that there's a ton of innovation and energy happening in the healthcare space. So I think there's a lot that is pushing healthcare forward. And I'm really excited to see that materialize. And I'm really excited to incorporate that into the work that we do at AmSurge. And I make no promises whatsoever. But for example, I was chatting with a company this week at Health, as I honestly just walked past their booth and it caught my eye. I wanted to have a conversation. And they are doing a blood test that screens for at 75 cancers. And so I started chatting with them because we do at AmSurge over 1 million colonoscopies a year. And so if the patient is already coming into our center and we already have that volume, the question I start to ask myself is, how do we optimize that patient visit? How do we optimize the patient's time, especially with a preventative health and preventative care lens? So if they're already coming in and they're already getting their colonoscopy, why not turn that into kind of the one-stop shop to also get the blood test done while they're there? We would then partner with this company. We would send the blood test to them. And then the patient can feel like they did a lot of preventative care for themselves in that one visit, as opposed to just checking the colonoscopy box. They also got all of this additional screening. So lots of opportunity.
I love what you're saying, because what you just described about win-win-win, that is something that's so frustrating in healthcare. And for you to be able to deeply connect with your values of being able to provide this high clinical quality for patients, but then understanding that there are all these other factors that impact our healthcare system, and that with the work that you all are doing, that you're able to really help all facets of the healthcare system as well. That is amazing. And then clearly one of your deeply held values is innovation. So that's wonderful with the work that you're doing, with the strategy, and that I think it can be frustrating sometimes working one-on-one, but you're able to really pull back and see how can we help. I mean, over 1 million colonoscopies is a lot. So that's over 1 million patients. Like, to be able to think about how can you help these patients at scale, that must be deeply gratifying.
That is by far the most gratifying part of my work, is seeing the lives touched every year and seeing the positive impact that we have. My father was unfortunately diagnosed and treated for colon cancer last year in 2022. Oh. And so it is also deeply personal, to be honest. And it's something that I am a big advocate for, is preventative cancer and particularly colon cancer screening. So when I had the opportunity to start to get into that space when I joined AmSurge, that was a win-win for me, honestly. It's always nice to check those boxes that you're really passionate about.
Yes. Well, let me ask you now about the flip side of that question.
You won't just let me be optimistic. I'm kidding.
I know, right. Because I know there's more to it than that. You're working.
There's always give and take. Yep.
Right. So what are some of the challenges in a position such as yours? What do you find draining?
Honestly, on the day-to-day, a lot of stuff that I find draining is the paperwork. And I'm sure that comes as no surprise, again, to your listeners. Any job is going to have a lot of administrative tasks. Some have more, some have less, but it's a nature of any role. And so for me, a lot of just, you know, I don't mind responding to emails if there's a conversation, but there's always that line between having a conversation and driving things forward versus just responding to emails that are just keep coming. It's a lot of the admin that drains me. And then candidly, HR, I would say on any given day, that's a give and take. And HR, I mean, human resources and the people element. I have a pretty large team underneath me. And on one hand, I actually find that energizing, because I really like professional development and helping people grow, helping people find their path. I took a very atypical path in life to some extent, but I was very fortunate to have people who were rooting for me and propping me up and encouraging me to take that atypical path. And I just like to give back where I was fortunate. So I do like to try to help others grow and find their own passion and find their own journey and encourage them along that way. So on one hand, the HR stuff can sometimes energize me. But on the other hand, it can also be very hard and very challenging. And again, I know this is something that echoes with many people cross industry. My parents are in the hospitality industry, and so they deal with this day in and day out. And I know this is defeating for them as well. Just whenever you're dealing with people challenges, it can be really hard. And, you know, even personally, we all know that. So it definitely goes over into the professional space as well. So that can be draining when you have to have those really tough conversations, or you have teammates that aren't showing up as they can or as they should. And you have to try to get to the bottom of that and figure out how to turn the ship around for themselves and for their role without taking further action. But it's a, like I said, it's a give and take. So some of those conversations actually turn around and you're energized by it. I very candidly had one a couple of weeks ago, and we have a teammate who just isn't performing where they have been historically. And so we were trying to get to the bottom of that as to what's going on. And part of that conversation was energizing because I could just feel the passion and the energy for the role that was coming for this teammate. This teammate gets so enthused by helping patients. That is really where they want to be. But their job description has actually fundamentally changed in the last 6 months as part of some rework that we've done internally. And so very candidly, I just don't think that the new role is the ideal fit for this person. And so that's what I mean by give and take. On one hand, I was so energized by their energy and how they want to impact healthcare. But on the other hand, I'm seeing the writing on the wall and realizing that the new role for this individual is probably not the best long term. And at some point, we'll probably have to part ways. And so just having those very honest and candid conversations and figuring out how to get that person on the best path for themselves as well. So pros and cons.
All right. Well, I think one of the things you just said about people who helped you along your way and that you did not have a traditional path, because you're in healthcare administration, but you don't have an MBA or a master's in healthcare administration. You are an MD. Can you tell us a little bit about your path and advice to medical students who might be considering a position in a field such as yours?
Sure. I'll tell you the kind of long version, just in the sense that it potentially might echo with some of your listeners. They might feel that they can relate to it. So I'll give a little bit more color. I started out wanting to go to medical school, honestly, from the age of like 10. I've always loved working with people and collaborating with people. I actually grew up, like I said, my parents were in the hospitality world, so I grew up on that. I was hanging coats when I was like in fourth grade at weddings and things like that. And I just loved working with people. In high school, that ended up meaning I was working in a hotel at a front desk. And the most gratifying part of that job for me was, I mean, it might sound trivial, but sometimes you would plan like a business dinner or an anniversary dinner or a wedding party. And just to see people's face light up when that went smooth and effectively and it had a good impact on their day, like that was really rewarding for me. So I knew I wanted a lot of that. I wanted the people and I wanted to help people. And then I also, very candidly, I am not a good history person or a good reader, but math and science is my strong suit. It always has been. So you take math and science and you add the people element and you put it together. And it was almost logical. It's like 1 + 1 = 2 type of thing. So ended up going to college at Columbia and decided I was going to be pre-med. You can't major in pre-med at Columbia. So I actually was a major in environmental biology, but I was pretty much on the pre-med track and always wanted to, I was thinking dermatology, which I know is how we connected, because for me, derm was the most appealing because people are so motivated to make changes. Often, and I'm sure you've seen this, and you know, for the primary care space, if we take an example, if someone has hypertension or high blood pressure, they can't see it, so they don't respond to it day in and day out. But when something's external and it lives on your skin, it truly impacts the way you interact with others. It impacts your self-confidence on the day in and day out. It impacts the way you carry yourself. So I wanted to help people, and I wanted to help people who wanted to help themselves. So I was really attracted to derm, wanted to go on that path. And then ended up actually doing nutrition degree right before medical school because I was also very interested in preventative wellness. And I do think that nutrition is the foundation for a lot of disease, not only prevention, but also treatment, and often overlooked, I think, on both of those elements. And as I'm sure you know, nutrition is what, 10 hours or 12 hours of the medical school curriculum at a lot of schools anymore. It's not much. And so I had somebody who's very, back to the mentors, I had somebody who was very honest with me and said, hey, I would actually do the nutrition degree first. And then you yourself can weave those threads throughout medical school because you're probably not going to get a lot of it in medical school. So I was grateful for that. Ended up in medical school first 2 years, as you know, and I'm sure as many of your listeners know, it's kind of almost, you know, it's what some of us do best. It's studying and learning and test taking. And so it was very familiar. And then by third year, I got into my rotations and I got about halfway through and we had a lecture on the business of healthcare. And again, this is an area where medical school education, maybe just a couple hours, right? Five hours max for some schools, not much. And I was fascinated. It's like the light bulb went off in my head. I truly will never forget the auditorium. I'll never forget where I was sitting. I'll never forget looking down on the lecture. I knew I had found my niche and I was particularly intrigued. And they showed that graph of healthcare outcomes and percent of GDP spend. And I was sad for, and you know, for the US, that's off, very off. And yes. So I was simultaneously enthused by the opportunity and also frustrated and angry by all the waste. And so my head was just spinning and I was trying to figure out how to learn more. And I was energized and I got back on rotations that same day right after lunch. And I saw my resident placing all these orders and I just saw check, check, check. And as he was placing these orders, my head was just thinking, dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs. And I started to just like, I don't think everyone has that moment, but for me, it was almost just happened within a couple of hours where I realized, wow. Hey, this really intrigues me. This is something that I want to try to solve. And then I went home that night and I was trying to study antibiotics and, you know, just be very candid. There's different strokes for different folks. And for me, I was bored to put it honestly. I just was thinking, hey, this didn't energize me. It didn't enthuse me. I'm honestly thinking I could probably Google this. Why am I memorizing this? So that was the initial spark. It was about halfway through third year. And okay. I did have a friend who was a year ahead of me and ended up graduating from medical school and going into consulting. Okay. And so a friend of a friend, a mutual friend, said, hey, you should go probably talk to her. I know she took a different path. Why did she go to consulting? What does that mean? And I didn't even know consulting meant either at the time. And so I reached out to her and she told me that there were some almost like summer camps between third year and fourth year. And so if anyone is listening to the podcast and they're early in their medical school career, I would encourage them to look into these because it's still an option for them. And so some of them are weekends, some of them are weeks. They vary depending on the company and what they offer, but it's tailored towards MDs or PhDs who are interested in exploring consulting. And so you go and you almost act like a consultant for the period of time. So again, would that be a weekend or a week? And you get thrown in just like a consultant would. You get a case and you do work with your teams and you try to problem solve, come up with the answer and do a quick roadmap for how to implement the answer. And I absolutely loved that experience. And that's again, another light bulb moment where I was like, this is a good fit. This is how my brain works. I really like distilling a lot of problems and a lot of information into the basics. I'm a big, like, give me the bullet points kind of person. So once I have the quick bullet points, then I try to figure out what's the problem. I try to figure out a quick solution. You implement the solution. And then this is probably where I like wearing my innovation hat. I like problem solving after that. So you implement the solution and then you go back. What's working? What's not? What resonates with those who are carrying this out, you know, often frontline doctors or frontline workers, what resonates for them with the solution, what doesn't. And then it's that feedback loop. You keep tailoring it until you can improve the problem over time. So all that to say, I ended up using that summer camp opportunity to get a role in healthcare, in healthcare consulting. And I joined Bain & Company after medical school immediately. So I actually didn't train. I didn't do residency, which is very atypical. Worked at Bain for a couple of years. And like I said, it resonated. It landed. I absolutely loved it. It's how my brain works. But I wasn't a healthcare focus. So at Bain, you are a generalist, which means you jump around in topics. So I always joke, I did one case in the trucking industry. So I can talk to you all about the trucking industry in America. Who knew?
Very cool.
It was very cool. It was very interesting. And then I did do one case with a pharmaceutical company, so a little bit more in my wheelhouse. And then I did one internal case about strategy, growth, and projecting. So what you're really learning at Bain and what I'm so grateful for with my time there and my experience there was that how to problem solve, how to do all those things that I like doing. How do you take all this information, distill it into quick bullets, define the problem statement, outline a solution almost based on your first hunch, because often your first hunch is very, very right or close to right. Implement it and then iterate on it. And so regardless of the topic or the industry, that's what Bain is trying to teach you to do. And that's what I'm grateful for, because I think I learned those skills during that time. But ultimately, I wanted to be back in healthcare. So I ended up, honestly, the role was forwarded to me. I wasn't necessarily job hunting, but the role for chief of staff to the president, chief medical officer of the medical group at Envision was forwarded to me. And that just seems like an amazing growth opportunity. I mean, when you're chief of staff to somebody who has that large of a job description and is over, we have 25,000 physicians on the medical group side, you know, you're going to see everything from, again, strategy to finance to business development, market development, people relations, physician support, clinical development, like you name it, it was there. And so I just thought it was an amazing opportunity. And him and I see a lot alike. He was an amazing mentor to me. So he also, what gets him up in the morning is that he always says he wants to make an impact. He wants to leave healthcare different for his kids than he found it. And he, so we share that love for innovation and change and driving a positive impact. And so that's what brought me to Envision 3 and a half years ago.
Okay. That is beautiful. That, but you have a very unique career path as well. Do you have advice for students on, and let's say they did not have the, and by the way, I didn't know that there were summer camps for exploring healthcare consulting. That's so cool. Do you have advice for students about, well, first of all, if they are a third year, how to find such summer camps, but let's say they're a fourth year, how would you advise a student such as that?
My general advice, my high level advice would just be follow your passion and follow your gut. And it doesn't have to be the same day in and day out. I think we often think that whatever you're passionate about and whatever career path you think you have to take or want to take when you're 18 has to suddenly be the same when you're 30 and then 50. And that is simply not the case. Your passions change, your experiences change, your ways of seeing the world and thinking change. So always just kind of check in with yourself and ask what it is that's going to enthuse you every day. What's going to get you up in the morning? What's a problem that you want to solve for? And it doesn't have to be the same as your peers if you're in medical school or any school. It doesn't have to be the same as your friends. Like, again, find what works for you and just then advocate and fight for yourself to follow that journey. The fun part about all the innovation and all the social media and all the collaborations happening in the world is you can find people who share that vision, share that passion. And so there's lots of opportunities out there. So that's my overarching advice. For those who are nearing the end of medical school and thinking, hey, and I'll talk about those that don't want to take the traditional path, because I think there's already a lot of support out there for those that do want to take the traditional path. But for those who don't want to take the traditional path, again, I would check in with yourself and figure out what it is that resonates with you. My guess is it's something in healthcare. That's why you probably went to medical school in the first place, or something about healthcare delivery. Maybe it's just making an impact. Maybe it's caring for people. Maybe you like people relations. Maybe you really liked the science of it and you're actually realizing that you kind of want to get back to the nuts and the bolts and the nitty gritty science that you learned in the first few years because that made you most excited. But there's probably something about it that drew you to healthcare. And so again, just try to zoom in on what that is. And then as a next step, reach out to folks who are in that area and just start asking. It's funny, people are so willing to help and I'm so grateful for that. You know, Dr. Cotta, I think I candidly just reached out to you on a whim because your area of expertise really aligned with my area of passion. And so I just wanted to learn more about what you were doing and what you were seeing. And one thing kind of just led to another from that. But I was so grateful that, you know, you didn't even hesitate. You responded to my email without knowing me or without putting a face to a name. And we just took it from there. And I think people would be surprised how often that happens. So I guess the quick phrase is don't be afraid to cold call. Reach out to people. For those that share your passion and your energy, they'll see that in you. They'll see that in themselves. And often great things can come from that.
There's so much about what you just said that I just want to cheer. Like one of the things that you said, it's almost like giving permission for people to realize that what you have a passion for at 18 is not necessarily the same as 30 and 50. And I see that so much because you're absolutely right. Your passions change, your experiences change, and also the world around you changes and you can start to see new opportunities or new places to make an impact. And what you just said about how you were at a conference and there's this company that's developing this amazing technology that you can then bring back to over 1 million patients. Those kind of opportunities may not have been there when you were 18. So I love so much about what you just said. And the piece about reaching out to people who you don't know, it takes a lot of guts to do that. But I think what you said is absolutely correct, that you just do not know how many people are out there who are willing to help or to at least speak to you. I found that myself as well. And by the way, you know, I'm very far advanced in my career and I still find it really hard to cold call or to cold email. It is uncomfortable.
It is scary. Yeah.
Right. But sometimes the opportunities that arise from that. So I just love so much about what you've said and just the fact that you're giving permission to people to explore these different areas that they're interested, or you use the word intrigued. I love that word as well. You know, maybe you don't have a full-on passion for something, but you're intrigued by something, like you're giving people permission to explore it. So,
and don't be afraid to, you know, almost like pick up the lid and look and then decide, hey, that's not actually for me. You might reach out to a person or a company and think, this seems amazing. This seems like something I'd be really energized by. This happened to me just at health this week. I was talking to a company and they're actually doing derm tech. And I reached out to them because I really was interested in the derm element of it. And I wanted to hear about that. And after a few minutes, I realized they're really interested in the tech element of it. And that's great. That's exciting. I would love to collaborate on how our two brands can come together. But what they're looking for are more people who can support the tech element. And so just for me naturally and for them naturally, it wasn't a great fit for us to, you know, collaborate and keep talking at that point in time. And so don't, I would just say, yeah, people are so happy and enthused often to collaborate with you. And it is scary, but the classic saying goes, do something every day that scares you. You'd be surprised at what comes out of it. So, and then, like I said, once you have those collaborations, just don't be afraid to say, hey, this isn't for me, or this is for me, or, you know, you talk about 10 things and maybe only one resonated with me, not the other nine, but I'm really going to go explore that one because I think that's awesome. And that's something I want to learn more about. So.
Isn't that cool? Well, there's so much wisdom that you've just imparted in this episode. I really want to thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences and for speaking candidly as well. That's really a gift to our listeners. So thank you, Dr. Vandersall.
And thank you, Dr. Cotta, for having me. It was a pleasure to be here. And I'm so glad I finally got to put a face to a name after all these years.
That's right. Isn't that fun? Thank you, technology.